Contemporary Music Centre podcast series. Composer of the Month for April 2008, Greg Caffrey. CMC now has a MySpace page, so if you have a suggestion for a podcast feature or any comments on any of our other podcasts, just go to myspace.com/CMC Ireland. In part one of this two-part podcast, Greg talks to Michael Quinn about becoming interested in contemporary music, entering formal music education, the importance of fun and enjoyment in his approach to composition, the importance of collaborating with performers while composing each work, and how the work Honk came about.
Greg Caffrey, we're sitting in the North Down Institute where you teach music and part of music technology and performing arts course. And I'm struck by the irony of that, given that you didn't have a music education yourself, or formal music education yourself.
Yeah. It's very strange how I got into the formal side of musical education. My primary school, if I can go back that far, was a very creative environment. In fact, all we really did was paint and draw and, you know, write poetry and stuff. In fact, I seem to remember that pupils in the class disappeared when it came up to the transfer exam because parents were so concerned that they may not do well from an academic standpoint. But anyway, when I transferred then to secondary school, I found that it was a very different environment indeed. And in fact, this would have been the mid-1970s, early to mid-1970s. It was a inner city school in Belfast, which was actually in an area that was, how would you describe it? It was like a war zone at that time, in fact. It was an army fort just opposite it. And I think the impression I got, well, at least in retrospect when I think about this, I think the teacher's role was more to keep the students off the streets and keep them, in a classroom somewhere, as much as it was to deliver any English lesson, maths lesson, or in fact music lesson. And we had no music whatsoever at secondary school. There was a music class, but nothing ever happened in it. I don't come from a family that has a formal musical background, but they certainly played records. And so my older brothers would have listened to, my eldest brother would have listened to kind of progressive rock, you know, Hawkwind and heavy rock like Led Zeppelin and that kind of thing. My other brother was more into David Bowie and Roxy music and that kind of thing. So that was going on in the house, and my father would play records as well occasionally. So music was always there, but just not at a formal level.
And so were you just listening to it? You weren't. Did you want to be involved?
I started. My aunt bought a guitar, a cheap guitar. She had a cheap guitar given to her or something, which she passed on to me. And so I learned to play that, and I took a few lessons initially, just to learn a few chords, and took it from there. But it wasn't until I got into secondary school that was some friends of mine were interested in music, and it was a great period in music in that at the end of the 1970s, when I was kind of getting towards the end of my secondary school education, there was this new wave that was kind of sweeping through, and all the prog rock of my eldest brother, for example, was being swept away and dismissed as unimportant and overindulgent. And there were a lot of new exciting bands coming through. And in fact, there was a very do-it-yourself ethos in that period as well, where young people were almost encouraged to go out and kind of, you know, get yourself an electric guitar somehow and plug it in. Discovered contemporary music through my guitar teacher much later on, because when I started playing in bands, you know, playing rock music in bands and doing gigs and that kind of thing, I suppose the next stage, there was some point where I felt that, you know, I would quite like to learn how to play this instrument properly, which in retrospect seems silly, because in some ways I really hark back to those early days where you perform with your friends in a youth club or something like that. You know, you playing and it's in the middle of January and your hands are blue and the only thing you've got to keep you company is a big bottle of cider or something like that, and you're all sitting enjoying yourselves, and that doesn't really happen very much, you know, in my musical life now. You know, we are working with individuals to that sort of intensity. The guitar is an instrument that, I mean, you can't really play the guitar and not come into contact with the contemporary repertoire.
Can you recall the moment at which you can move from an interest in performance to an interest in composing?
Composition. I wrote some songs very early on when I used to play in bands, just songs, pop songs. And then there were two other guys who were in the band who were much better at writing songs than I was. This is another big irony, because I compose now and they don't. And they're very, very talented individuals, both of these people. Then I went to, I got a place in Queens, which, you know, I was amazed at. You know, I spent the first couple of months at Queens not really pinching myself, not really believing that I'd been given a place there, and that, you know, perhaps I didn't belong here, in fact. And I remember sitting in the library looking out at the lawns and going, this is unbelievable. But in fact, you know, I did belong there, I think, because a lot of the students were, you know, perhaps A-level students who had elected to do music simply because they'd got a reasonable grade in their music exam, but didn't have any particular interest as far as I could see, whereas I was probably the annoying student who held the lecturers back at the end of their lesson when they wanted to go and have a cup of tea or something like that.
So did you have a notion of the kind of composer you wanted to be at the time?
Not really, no. I mean, I think I took composition classes. Piers Halliwell was the composition tutor there at the time, still is. And so I started composition classes. I was also, I had a kind of dual interest in the contemporary classical music thing and also jazz music at that stage as well. So, and I also still liked performing. So I was kind of torn between the whole thing of, you know, composing and performing, and if I was going to perform, was it going to be jazz music or was going to try and, you know, play classical music? Or I always knew that I had to specialise in something. And I guess it was probably not until I started embarked upon a PhD after graduating that I really started to think that composition is perhaps the way forward. Right at the centre of the music is, I hope, a strong feeling of fun and enjoyment. You know, I mean, I think it's easy to lose that as you go through the formal process. I mean, I think I've seen that happen, in fact. And, you know, I was talking earlier about, you know, playing in youth, practicing with your band in youth clubs when I was very young and very inexperienced. But we had a real commitment there that you rarely see. And you know, you rarely see classical musicians with that kind of commitment, I think. I mean, it does exist, of course. There are plenty of musicians out there who do nothing but, you know, exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. You know, perhaps not in a cold youth club with a bottle of cider.
Jazz is difficult for some people because it has that kind of contrary thing about being both fixed and sometimes flexible and fluid.
Mm-hmm.
As a composer, do you like the idea that there's an element of freedom left to the performers?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, any of the performers that I've worked with will tell you that, you know, that if they suggest changes in the music, that quite often I'm very keen to implement them. I think that that for me is the process where the piece of music comes to life, you know. And there is a tradition in classical music where a composer writes a score, and the score is the thing by which all the value judgments on that piece of music are made. There's a, you know, a whole history of analysing scores to determine, you know, how important that music is. And of course, it's, you know, it's just a set of instructions at the end of the day. I feel very strongly that until a player adopts a piece and starts to work with a piece and give a voice to a piece, that, you know, it really can't be called music until that point. So that aspect that you've talked about is very important to me, working with a performer and trying to mould the piece after it's written.
And how do you build that into a piece? Is there, in the process of writing, do you, mm-hmm. are you conscious of doing certain things that create that space?
I have written pieces that have improvised elements. I mean, the best example of that would be the Child's Play pieces that I wrote, but of course they were performed by my own group, mm-hmm. so it's a slightly different thing. But I think that, you know, the best thing, rather than write that kind of thing in at the score level, I think the best thing that you can do there is to strike up a proper relationship with the people who are going to be performing your music. Like, for example, you know, the relationship that I would have with Gerard McChrystal or Ashley Nigneux and Matthew McAllister, for example, where we have spent some time in the past rehearsing the pieces, and they've actually invested in the music to the extent where they played it not once or twice, but, you know, quite a few times, so that the music has time to develop, and you know, they haven't. He just rang me up one day, and he'd been given some of my music by Craig Ogden, who I'd met in the Contemporary Music Centre. And he seemed tremendously enthusiastic on the phone, but often people are tremendously enthusiastic on the phone. But actually, when I met Gerard, you know, I realised that, you know, he was someone who genuinely wanted to invest in my music. And so he's continued to do that. He had plans to record an album. It's the album that he just released with Meridian Records, which is actually called Pluck Blow.
With Craig Ogden,
yeah. And I suggested that they come to my house. I have, you know, some studio equipment in the house, and I suggested that they come down there, stay for the weekend, and that we get an engineer in and do a demo. And so that's what we did, and we were able to kind of work on not just my material, but he was able to perform some other material that he was interested in, and we had a great weekend, you know, eating some nice wine, some nice beer, and lots of nice music. I think, I'm pretty sure it was during that weekend that Gerard said to me that he really would like a piece, and the piece Honk materialised perhaps a year or a year and a half after that, and it turned out to be a piece for soprano saxophone and piano. Mm-hmm. Although I have a feeling that initially he asked me for a solo soprano saxophone piece, but not quite sure how the piano part developed.
But in a sense, that the piano acts as a kind of commentary in that.
Yeah, it does, yeah. I mean, that's what I think the piano largely gives it, its kind of playfulness.